Greg Bordonero joining us as he always does at 8:50 on a Monday with the Connecticut Business Blend. Greg, of course, runs the ship over at the Hartford Business Journal. Good morning. How are you? Oh, there you go. You there?
Yep. Can you hear me, Brian?
Yeah, I got you now. Listen, I'm confused. You get the truffles in Italy, and they fly them to Connecticut. And then what happens to them in Connecticut that makes them? I don't understand that. I don't understand how it works, because it says, you know, Connecticut has the largest truffle manufacturing facility, but why do they need to send them from Italy to here, and what happens here? I don't really understand the business.
Sure. So the company is called Sabatino Company. They were founded in Italy back in 1911, so over 100 years old. The current owners are Federico Balistra and his sister. They took over in the 90s. So basically, you know, this company started in their market was primarily Italy. In the 90s, they decided to, with competition increasing in Italy, they decided to go into the export market. Started in Europe, and then in 1999, they decided they needed to crack into the U.S. market. So they started in New York. Then, you know, as soon as they got to the U.S., the product started to take off, really, in the U.S. market. They needed to expand. They moved to Connecticut because of cheaper real estate prices. And most recently, they just expanded to 125,000 square foot West Haven plant. So what they do in West Haven is right now they do get the truffles imported or from Italy, but they make all sorts of different products now. They don't just sell the truffles to, say, high-end restaurants. They make olive oil products. They make a chili crisp product. They make a hot sauce product. So in the U.S., and a lot of these products are just made in the U.S. for the U.S. market. You know, they said if you tried to sell a truffle hot sauce in Italy, yeah, you probably wouldn't get any customers. But in the U.S., they're creating all these new products for the U.S. market. So that's what's happening in the U.S. And this company also just bought land in Kentucky where they're going to start to grow their own truffles in the U.S. So that will be part of the reason why they've expanded in Connecticut, because when those truffles are grown, they'll come to Connecticut. Well, they'll manufacture even more of these products across the U.S.
It's interesting. Makes a lot. That is clarity. So thank you for that. We're talking with Greg Bordonero from the Hartford Business Journal and the Connecticut Business Blend. You know, this tourism funding story is one of those things where the debate over, so COVID money, it should be for one-time expenses. And, you know, if you're a budget hawk, you're like, we shouldn't have things folded and become permanent expenditures. And this tourism funding is kind of a classic example that they had extra money because of COVID and now it's gone. But so now it feels like a shortfall when the actual investment from the state is kind of the same.
Yeah, and this is what, you know, you're seeing this with the colleges now. You know, they got all this federal funding, it runs out, and they say, no, you're cutting our funding. Well, it's kind of from a state perspective in tourism, the tourism funding that Governor Lamont proposed is actually keeping it even at the state level, $4.5 million. It's currently $4.5 million this fiscal year, and that's what Governor Lamont is proposing to spend over the next 2 years. The issue is that federal pandemic aid has significantly increased the tourism funding budget over the last 4 years, as high as $12 million in federal funding for 1 year over the last 4 years. This year, it's down to about $3.1 million, so that money will go away next year. So, you know, they're looking at a $3.1 million shortfall next year for tourism marketing funding, and then individual artist groups are also going to be impacted, millions of dollars in cuts there. So, you know, the tourism industry has long said, but the bigger picture is that Connecticut has spent much less than the rest of sort of New England on tourism funding on a per capita basis. So this has been a longstanding issue. So, yes, you know, they're losing the federal money, but overall, the tourism industry says, you know, Connecticut isn't really spending what the rest of New England is spending on tourism. So this has been a long-standing issue. The tourism industry held a conference a couple weeks ago where they tried to come up with sort of new funding ideas, you know, including they want to take off 1% of the meals and beverage tax in the state, let 1% of that funding go to the tourism and restaurant industry. There was talk about creating tourism districts that would have taxing powers. Maybe they could add like a 1% on top of the hotel lodging and tax, and that money would go to the hotel industry. Governor Lamont did not support any of those policies in his budget, but it'll be interesting to see where talks go. As we know, you know, there's still lots of negotiating to go in the budget. Yeah. But, you know, tourism is a pretty big industry in Connecticut, especially during the summertime, which is what we're all headed into right now.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Two other stories I want to get to. One is, you know, we saw how the federal government wants to divest itself from some real estate. How is Connecticut impacted?
Yeah, so you know, across the country, the Department of Government Efficiency, which is the sort of the unofficially Elon Musk-led agency that's doing a lot of the layoffs within federal agencies, they're also looking at the real estate holdings of the federal government, which are vast across the United States. So far, they've targeted six leases in Connecticut that they're eliminating. It's only 32,000 square feet of space, which is not a huge big deal, but most of that space is actually going to be in Hartford, which is already struggling with its office market, including 24,000 square feet in the Stilts building, if anybody is familiar with Hartford, which is already in foreclosure right now, so it's not going to help that that building out. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has the space there. There's also leases in Stamford, New London, Wallingford, and Middlesex that have been terminated or are on the docket for termination. U.S. federal government overall has 55 leases in Connecticut totaling 678,000 square feet of space, so it'll be interesting to see if additional leases get targeted. My guess is they would. And then there's also the DOGE put out another federal agency put out a list last week of federal buildings that are going to be up for sale. And including in that was the William Cotter Federal Building in downtown Hartford, which is a major, pretty significant sized building. Holds various federal agencies, including IRS, Social Security Agency, others. It has 155,000 square feet, so that could be going up for sale. Interesting, it's located across the street from a parking lot that's being eyed for a new federal courthouse, which has been a project that's been talked about for 4 or 5 years now. I wonder if that funding will be allocated for that new courthouse. So that's a project that may be delayed at least through the next 4 years.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the federal courthouse. We're talking with Greg Bordonaro from the Hartford Business Journal and the Connecticut Business Blend. A really interesting story about a new restaurant in Hartford and how influencers really can make a difference. Have you eaten there, by the way? I have not.
I have not. Apparently, it's hard to get the reservations right now. But you know, this wasn't just a story about a restaurant opening. It's about sort of how small businesses like restaurants are using social media influencers now as a key part of their marketing tool. So the Foundry restaurant's called. They're located at the top of the Hartford Steam Boiler building, nice views of the downtown. And they hired basically Cheshire-based Rebellion Group, which is a marketing agency. And as part of their sort of opening marketing push, they brought in 15 social media influencers. They were unpaid, but they were allowed to eat the food, try out the food, and take photos and videos. And this was a key, and you know, they did the normal media interviews as well, but the social media influencers were a key part of their marketing strategy, and they saw significant upshots in their social media. You know, their Instagram followers went up 260% within 5 days of having the social media influencers there, and the social media engagement was up over 4,000% in just a few days. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying reservations, it typically requires as many as 30 days in advance to get it. So it's just interesting how social media influencing is really becoming a part of the mainstream in terms of marketing. And it's a pretty big market segment.
Well, listen, it can be cheaper, but the fact that it actually works is sort of like the thing that I find pretty fascinating. Listen, go to HartfordBusiness.com if you want to read any more details of these stories. You can find all of them there. Greg, have a great week. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Greg Bordonaro from the Hartford Business Journal. Again, every Monday at 8:50, it is the Connecticut Business Blend.